Hi, this is Mike Miller from Harmony Street. As you may know, I was the first tenor for the Islanders of doo-wop a cappella fame. As the doo-wop a cappella craze was catching on during the early 60s, young singers that had the doo-wop sound in their heads and their heart were hitting the street corners and finding little echo-producing nooks and crannies. One of these little meccas was in the Herricks Shopping Center in New Hyde Park, Long Island. In this little alcove, formed by the long windows of Miles' shoe store, there was a fabulous echo. On any given evening, you could hear Jimmy Ponticelli, Russ Kivitiski, Tommy Lysak, Tom Jackalone, Mike Miller, Howie Marr, Jimmy Hanley, Harry Anafantakis, and a host of others, some of who just came to listen and yell out their favorite tunes. If you were really good, you hit Traveling Stranger, some Jive 5 stuff, or the round in the hook of Happy Teenager by Randy and the Rainbows. There were certain guys that owned certain songs, like Russ Kivitiski. His tune was Rhythm of the Rain by the Cascades. There were four guys who seemed to find each other more often than not throughout this process. They were Jimmy Hanley, Howie Marr, Jimmy Ponticelli, and the best lead in the neighborhood, Tommy Jackalone. They were all from Herricks High School in New Hyde Park, except for Jimmy Hanley, who was from Mineola. Now, very few of the street corner groups went into the studio to record with a band right away. The Islanders were very tight and decided at one point to go cut a record in Hempstead, Long Island at the new Ultrasonic Studios, owned by Bill Stahl. Ultrasonic was one of the first 8-track studios in the country. Don Casale was the chief engineer at Ultrasonic. They recorded two originals, Pretty Girl and Answer My Prayer. They called themselves the Four Shadows and were backed by a group who called themselves the Four Fifths on the demo. Each member received an acetate, which really can only be played a few times. And truth be told, the acetate denigrated over the years and was almost non-playable. The very next venture for the group was to become part of the Best of Acapella series in Jersey, hooked up by their manager, Ron Schubert. Most of the tunes recorded have become collector's items. The group was now called the Islanders. The Islanders covered just about every song that the Jive 5 ever made. The Jive 5 were well respected by all of the members of the Islanders, and their songs were difficult to sing. As I told Gene when I interviewed him, you really have to be able to sing in order to cop the Jive 5 tune, and he was very pleased by that. One of the tunes that was chosen to be on the Relic series, recorded by the Islanders, was My True Story. The group eventually went on to record Happy Man as well. Happy Man was never released by Relic, but we're happy to have found the recording and to have placed it on this particular CD, which we hope that you will enjoy.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to introduce to you one of my heroes, the lead singer and the founder of the Jive 5 R&B royalty, Mr. Eugene Pitt. How you doing, Eugene?
Hey, how you feeling, Mr. Mike?
I'm feeling great because I get to talk to a person that I've really held near and dear in my heart for many years. I'm going to take you back to about 1964 and 65. I had a group called the Islanders in those days, and we were a street corner group. We were signed to Relic Records. One of the guys in the group I spoke to today, his name is Tom Jackalone. He was the lead singer, and I said, I'm going to be spending some time with Eugene. Do you have anything to ask him? He said, I have nothing to ask Eugene, but I do want you to tell him from me that I love him. So there you go.
You can repeat that for me also, Mike.
We covered every tune the Jive 5 ever, whether they were top 10 tunes or not. And as a matter of fact, the piece de resistance was that on Relic Records, the Islanders had the a cappella version of My True Story, which was part of that, the best of a cappella on Relic Records. And that's quite a collector's album, actually.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that version of it.
Oh, I have. You know that. I got mine from Eddie Grodd.
There you go. Wayne and Eddie.
That's right.
Sure. And isn't that interesting? But, you know, I just want you to know that not only did the mainstream listen to the Jive 5 and have all the records in the jukebox, but when other groups go right out on the street corner and sing, you know, the stuff that you're putting out, that's the biggest compliment. As a matter of fact, Jive 5 stuff is what separated the men from the boys, because not everybody could sing My True Story and not everybody could sing What Time Is It. You had to be able to sing in order to do those tunes.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I like that line. You have to be able to sing.
Absolutely. In other words, if you're going to come and do that kind of material, unless you can really sing it, don't show up.
Right. You can't sing it.
No, I hear you. Having seen you from the audience and having seen you from the side and from the back of the stage, I mean, you're one of the coolest guys that ever walked onto a stage, because you're so at ease on stage that it's like you own the stage.
Thank you very much, Mike.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
God bless, man.
God bless you too, Gene. Yeah. Talk to you soon, man. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Another surprise for the group was that the team at Relic decided to raise the pitch of the group one half step. Their excuse was, we think it makes the group sound tighter. Now, this was always a sore spot for the guys in the group, but that is what record companies did. They changed people's names. They pretty much did what they wanted to do in that genre. Let's just call it the world of a cappella doo-wop. One of the highlights of singing a cappella is that you can take it wherever you go. We remember getting into the car and stopping at interesting places, getting out and drawing a crowd wherever we went. One place that we sang was Nathan's in Long Island. We would go and sing in the parking lot, drawing a crowd and being chased by the manager yelling, "Get lost, Maguire sisters. No one's buying hot dogs. They're all in the parking lot listening to you guys." Another trip was drawing a crowd at Jones Beach, either in the tunnel at Gate 4 with the Echo, or on the blanket, where we drew huge crowds calling out tunes. We would just chime off, and we would sing the tune with no forethought whatsoever. You know, during the process, I used to hang around with the guys on the corner quite a bit, but I also had a very popular band in which I was the lead singer. One day, Tommy Jacalone approached me and asked me to replace Jimmy Bonicelli in the group as the first tenor. Of course, I said yes, because it was a great group, and the group was actually taking it up a notch and singing some very sophisticated arrangements, because I used to use the guitar as a reference to arrange the vocals. One evening, the group had the pleasure of singing in a club for Sandy Yaguta from Jay and the Americans. The Islanders sang their rendition of Walking in the Rain, the original Ronette song, which they recorded on Relic. Shortly after that, Jay and the Americans recorded the song with Jay Black on lead. Jimmy Hanley always said that they did so because they heard the Islanders sing it shortly before. And Tommy recently reminded me that the Islanders opened for the Isley Brothers at the Action House on Long Island when Jimi Hendrix was their guitar player. What a thrill. We also had the pleasure of being the opening act at Clay Cole's World near Roosevelt Field on Long Island. One night, Johnny Maestro told us backstage that we were good enough to record and should seriously think about it. I remained friends with Johnny until his untimely death.
Hi, this is Clay Cole with my good friend Mike Miller.
As luck would have it, the Islanders were introduced to Gene Moretti of Glen Cove, who was looking for talent for his newly formed GMC label. Gene was the VP of international sales for MGM Records, and he was the one who originally signed Connie Francis to MGM, as substantiated by Connie. In his retirement, he decided to finance his own label. It was Go-Go Music Corporation, GMC Records. Gene did all of the recording at the famous Mayfair Studios in Manhattan, right above the Metropole Cafe. The Islanders recorded six sides with Mike Abeen, who was Maynard Ferguson's piano arranger, and an orchestra composed of many of Maynard's players. Two of the tunes, Where the Lights Are Bright and Baby Pack On, written by Ray Cerrone of the I've Had It Bell Notes, fizzled out after being picked with a bullet in Cashbox magazine. Later, they became Northern Soul hits in the UK. The record was going for sometimes $475. The record actually became a collector's item and is hardly available to be bought anymore. Another really good time that we had, one night we all piled into the car and we drove up to the Catskills to the Raleigh Hotel, if I remember correctly, and we sang up there. And I think Johnny Maestro and the Brooklyn Bridge at that time was singing in a room where there were about two couples. I went up to him and I said, "Why don't you guys do two more tunes and then knock it off?" He said, "Nope, I don't care if there's one person in the room, they get the whole show." That was John. The Islanders made their mark in the doo-wop a cappella genre. Their name is featured in almost every book written about the genre. One night at rehearsal at Gene's house, Jay Traynor, the original Jay from Jay and the Americans, was there to greet the group, and in his hand he had a demo cassette of a song he had written called Looking Out My Window. The Islanders never did get a chance to record that song. Mike still has the tape in his collection and discussed it with Jay in an interview a few years ago. Jay sadly passed away in 2014.
What will I see looking out my window? Looking out my window, looking for my love. What will I see looking at the blue skies? Maybe it's her blue eyes looking back at me.
Sadly, reel-to-reel tapes of many rehearsal sessions of the Islanders were stolen or lost over the years, and the members of the group went on their way to become successful in other areas. One of the arrangements on those stolen tapes was an up-tempo version of The Wind, recorded by the Diablos and the Jesters. Mike went on to recreate that arrangement when he was singing lead for the Mystics in Florida. Mike Miller also went on to have a successful music career singing lead with many hit oldie groups and does the Harmony Street Radio interview show with over 300 interviews.
Oh, kisses in the cold summer breeze as she lay warm and tender in my arms.
When the subject came up about re-releasing the Islanders, Harmony Street Productions, along with Stevie Dunham of Street Corner Entertainment, decided to find and digitalize some of the original Islanders songs. I wish that the group had continued after the release of the first GMC recording, but disappointment compounded by young adults finding their way in the world and the terrible reality of the war in Vietnam actually put an end to the Islanders' singing career. Another very interesting bit of information: Jimmy Handley did not complete his vision of becoming a major star in the genre, but his son, Jason Handley, became Vice President of Education and Visitor Engagement of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're with me on the Harmony Street Show, and I am thrilled today to have as my guest a longtime friend and the CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Mr. Terry Stewart. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's so good to hear your voice again. Now, I sang years ago with a guy by the name of Jimmy Handley, and we had a group called the Islanders. Right out of high school, we did the Best of Acapella series.
You sang with Jason Handley's dad.
That is exactly right. I sang with Jason Handley's, and I was talking to Jimmy, and he said to me, you know, my son got to do something that I always wanted to do, and that is rub elbows with all of the greats in the business. And how do you like that? I tried as hard as I could, and here's my son who just wandered into a situation, you know, with The Rock, and he's very proud of his son.
Yeah, no, he's a great educator. He's about to defend his thesis for his PhD here in a couple of weeks, so we're all excited about that, and get that extra set of letters behind his name. I know his dad will be excited about that, too.
Here's Jason Handley in his own words.
The purpose of the education programs here at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum is to educate anyone who comes into this building or who is interested in this music about why it's so important and how it tells the history of who we are and what we do on a regular basis. I love the fact that a typical day for me might be teaching kindergarten students in the morning, teaching a college class in the afternoon, and then an adult education program in the evening. We're not just teaching about music. Now, of course, it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so everything we do comes back to the music. But we're also teaching things like language arts. We teach classes here where it's the science of sound. We're learning how do we hear? How does sound travel through the air? But we're doing it with rock and roll music and teaching them how does an amplifier work? There's a science behind that. So we're able to take that music and that excitement and those things that interest students and adults and broaden it out to look at a whole range of different subjects, academic ideas, and connect them directly to things that students are asked to learn about in school every single day. Our distance learning program called On the Road, where we take the museum on the road with us, has served almost 10,000 students since it started about 3 years ago. And that number continues to grow all the time. And it's not just here in the United States, where we've already taught close to, I think, 26 states. We've moved internationally now, too. We've already taught students in Australia, in Canada, Mexico, and even recently in England.
Well, I'd love to get them, Jason. We've talked about it. What was the name of the group?
It was called The Islanders, and we were actually on Relic Records, the best of a cappella on Relic. And as a matter of fact, one of the tunes, which was written by Ray Cerrone from the Bell Notes, is a tune called Baby Pack On, I found out is a Northern Soul hit in Europe, and it's going for about $200. I don't even have a copy of the record, but somebody sent me an email. It's very interesting how that works.
Yeah, you need a box of 25 there, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
We're so proud of Jason, as we are so proud of all the guys that sang in this group. This group was good enough to be a major force in the genre, as were so many of the local groups that were that good. There was a very fine line between those groups that had million-selling hits and some of those groups who didn't, because the planets were just not perfectly lined up. I pay homage to those groups, especially with my radio show, because those groups are really the foundation and the structure of the genre that we love so much. This CD is a tribute to all of those Long Island guys who stood on the street corner for a while, singing their hearts out.